Coming down in 3, 2, 1. 2023, what a year it was. For mixed martial arts, for boxing, for combat sports. Incredible year for the UFC is in the books. Boxing still has a gigantic event this Saturday, Riyadh Arena in Saudi Arabia. Parker Porter, Otto Wallen are being sacrificial lambs to Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. Hopefully we get that fight in 2024. Next week, I'll do, I guess, a preview and do's and don'ts for 2024, what I'm looking forward to most. Maybe breakout superstar in the making. Tatiana Suarez, Bo Nickel. Can Khamzat finally crack through to championship status? We will see. I'll do that next week. And along with the 2023 awards, best UFC debut, best fight, best knockout, best submission. Hell of a year for knockouts. Submissions, pretty good. Nothing too crazy that razzle-dazzle, that standout. An amazing, incredible comeback fight. We'll get into that next week. Very excited for it. But first and foremost, pleasantries, window dressing. It's your boy, your brother-in-arms, Isaac Ike Feldman. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you guys are having a nice holiday season. December should bring out the best in people, not the worst in people. Follow me everywhere at Ike Dagon. And if you want to learn more about your boy, your friend, your family member, IkeDagon.com. So, UFC 296. Yes, Colby Covington crossed the fucking line, bringing up Leon Edwards' dead father. Horrible. And I don't know. I feel like Colby Covington is the last of the Conor McGregor era of that absolute disgusting trash talk. We kind of saw Conor McGregor take the turn with the trash talk during and then obviously after the Floyd Mayweather fight. Floyd towed the line and got people riled up, but Conor did not take that page from him. Conor crossed the line to get under Floyd's skin to make it something that it wasn't. But Floyd was a calm and cool customer like Khabib the year after and the fight after for McGregor. But in the lead up to 2017 when Maymac happened, McGregor was excellent on the microphone with Jose Aldo, with Donald Cowboy Cerrone, with Jeremy Stevens, Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier. Absolute savage, and that is, if they can encapsulate, I believe he was in the UFC from 2013 up until 2016, the UFC 205 fight against Eddie Alvarez. If they can, like, capture that and make it the art of trash talk, if that becomes a book, that's how it's done, folks. Chael Sonnen, very beautiful in his trash talk. Obviously, great salesperson and now doing media post-fighting career. Obviously, killing it with the analyst work and his podcast. We saw the clash between him and Helwani was just amazing. A couple of weeks ago, that was incredible. Nobody wanted to give an inch. Helwani won the debate, but you couldn't get enough of what Chael was going to say because he was professionally rude, and that's how debate is done. It was an ode to the Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith days on ESPN's First Take, or Cold Pizza originally, and then turning into First Take. That's what that reminded me of. Pure art of debate. Mike and the Mad Dog, Mike Francesa, Chris Mad Dog Russo on WFAN. I believe they started early 90s, and it's well known among everybody to do a 5.5-hour radio show with somebody and just constantly make it friction. Sometimes there's smiles and grins, but it's constantly a tug of war for who's right, who's more entertaining, who's smarter. And everybody will always credit for Mike and the Mad Dog for their amazing debates. But yeah, Conor McGregor, he changed this whole generation of fighter. He made the suits popular. He made the trash talk super popular. It was popular with Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen, sure. But Conor McGregor took it to that next level. Like the UFC selling to Endeavor, Morris, William Morris Endeavor, bringing it to ESPN, being a part of massive combat sports events with the McGregor Mayweather 4.3 pay-per-view buys, the Khabib Conor fight, 2.4 million pay-per-view buys. Obviously, the whole 2015-2016 years for Conor McGregor with Jose Aldo, Nate Diaz, Eddie Alvarez, Chad Mendes, just absolute amazing. Like, those years were just amazing. If you're a combat sports fan and you're watching it unfold in real time and not with some nifty 5 year later YouTube documentary that some individual user made, like, if you were living in the moment listening to Joe Rogan before the whole politics and the world wanted to come crashing down on Joe Rogan's shoulders, Joe Rogan having Chael Sonnen on, Brendan Schaub on, and just talking about what we're seeing from this Irishman, it was just absolutely phenomenal. Now, my point is, it's gotten too far. It's gotten ugly. It's gotten dark again. What Colby Covington did was dumb and a poor sales tactic, and you wonder how that man sleeps at night. He did, however, pivot towards a future fight, which was a very intelligent business move, which he started attacking Wonder Boy. And maybe Ben Davis online really picked it up the most, that this is great. Like, what did Wonder Boy ever do to Colby Covington? It's going to be classic good Jedi versus Sith Jedi battle. Good versus bad. Wonder Boy, maybe he even cracks through and drops some, like, psychological Kabbalah, Buddha, some type of, like, poetry that says, like, Colby, maybe you didn't get a hug by your dad when you were younger, but my dad is in my corner always. Like, maybe we can get that from Wonder Boy. Just another layer to him. Because Wonder Boy, he's pleasant. He is polite. He's just a person that gushes a innocent and pure and joyous aura to him. Like, it will be almost impossible to find dirt on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, but Colby Covington is trying. He's already taken shots at Stephen Wonderboy's academy and lifestyle, that he's a pedophile because he hangs around kids, he teaches kids, he drives kids around. It's cheesy and it's funny. I think people will recognize that, how ridiculous it is. What Colby said about Leon Edwards' father was too far. And he was saying in the post-fight that he doesn't feel bad for what he said, even in hindsight, because Leon Edwards' father was involved in gang violence. And that's not telling the whole story. It really isn't. There's a whole systematic side to it that is not being told or presented by Colby Covington. And it was dark. It was dark. A lot of people say that Colby's shtick is old and we're tired of it. No, that's who he is. I think it's just on steroids when he has the sunglasses on and he's in front of a microphone. But to think that's just some type of act that Colby is, when he goes home, he's like, yeah, I'm actually a Democrat, or yeah, joy to the world. No. That Colby is this hardcore Republican that that believes in respecting the strong, and that's it. I get it. And I think people need to not fight him on that, but kind of play mental or verbal jujitsu with it, which I think Stephen Wonderboy Thompson will, where he just calls him out, like, why are you so angry? Why do you have this hate towards me? What did I do to you? Like, if he can do that, I think Stephen Wonderboy Thompson can break this anger tirade that Colby is on. I just feel like he's angry. I feel like something is not settled. There's something unsettled in his mind that needs to be settled. And I don't think it's... Could it just be as simple as just winning that UFC gold and all of a sudden he's going to be like, all right, guys, I did it. I'm sorry. I'm here. I made it. I'm sorry. Like, and he's just going to weep on the microphone to Joe Rogan after he becomes a UFC champion? Nah. If he wants to be a UFC champion, there's some truth that he has to speak in the lead up. Yeah, so we'll see. I know I'm getting down the psychological side of things, but I believe that is one of the biggest factors in mixed martial arts, the psychological side of things. More than any other sport on this planet, mixed martial arts involves psyche and having a strong mindset. One day, I will study some type of like psychology class and to really be able to translate my words from shooting from the hip, guessing kind of, armchair quarterback diagnosing to actually understanding what I'm hearing, what I'm looking at when it comes to fighters, fighters speak, you know, that strength that they want to exude, that confidence that they want to exude. Sometimes it doesn't even take a master's degree in psychology to see that a fighter is just projecting this persona that they think everybody wants to see. Sometimes it's that obvious. You could be a 16-year-old and you're like, oh, Connor is he's not who he used to be, but he's trying to sell us on that. But the fight itself, Leon Edwards, Colby Covington, high-level martial arts. Leon did what he told me he was going to do. He guaranteed a takedown. He took Colby down at least twice. He was able to wizard Colby, keep him off, get back to his feet. He obviously got caught up in some emotional, obviously, you know, Colby, that's what he went for, being a mental terrorist in the lead-up. And Leon was a product of that. But for the most part, for I'd say 95% of the fight, he was calm and composed. Getting back to his feet on the first scramble and then landing that head kick right on the ear of Colby Covington was fucking beautiful martial arts technique. Absolutely beautiful. And Leon looked great. People are talking about his gas tank being an issue because of the Usman fight. If I'm not mistaken, he knocked out Usman in the last minute at elevation. Usman is somebody who trains in Colorado, which is elevated, and the shift to Utah for their fight at UFC 278 in Salt Lake City probably was not that severe for Usman. But Edwards, obviously, he was dragging. He wasn't himself through the first four rounds and 4 minutes, but he found it. He dug deep, and his great coach, Dave Lavelle, just that infamous Rocky speech, now, come on, son, you can do it. I don't think cardio is an issue for him. What are people going to point to? The Nate Diaz thing? I would say that's more of a focus thing. I feel like he was so far ahead on the scorecards with Nate Diaz that he just lost focus, and he got freaking tagged out of left field from Nate Diaz down the pipe. I think even if the fight went another round, Leon Edwards would have woken up from those heavy punches that Nate Diaz landed on him. So I'm not worried about his gas tank. Look, nobody's going to reference the fight in his backyard in the O2 Arena against Usman, UFC 286, the rematch. Nobody's going to reference that, that Leon's gas tank looked perfectly there. And I think he looked great against Colby. I think there were a couple of moments, like I said, 95% he seemed focused, but there were a couple of moments where he did these emotional exchange. The martial arts technique was fueled by emotion. Shooting for a takedown after Colby got a takedown. When he got back to his feet, is like his blood was pumping, his muscles were filled, and he looked a little like, okay, I got to catch my breath. Like, he's still that angry kid that has so much to prove. And I think the peak fight is his next fight, in my opinion. I think the next fight for Leon Edwards, everybody will respect him. He may even claim the number one pound-for-pound spot, because we may get him versing the number one pound-for-pound fighter in Islam Makhachev. I want to see that fight at 170. I think that's great. I think Makhachev is a big, beefy, lightweight. Or we can do Edwards versus the winner of the 185 fight next month, which would be absolute bananas. If Dreykus Duplessis beat Sean Strickland, you talk about, that would be the optics on seeing Duplessis stand next to Edwards would just be insane. Unless Edwards is taller than he looks, Duplessis is just a vanilla gorilla, just this big old dude that looks like he could walk on his hands. Now, originally, I thought that Sean Strickland was going to win, but now with this whole the engineered promo where Sean Strickland is fighting Dreykus Duplessis in the T-Mobile Arena during UFC 296, ridiculous. Because now, for the wrong reasons, I feel like Sean Strickland is getting attention. I feel like there may be, again, diving into the psychology, we're just under a month from that fight, December 21st, it is today. That fight's January 20th. And you hope that Sean Strickland can wipe away, or has annihilated, or has chained down those demons that he talks about so much on Rogan, on the UFC Unfiltered podcast, where he talks about the crummy childhood that he had, and the not so fatherly figure he had as a father, as a child. And if he can keep those same demons down that have gotten to this point of stardom and championship status, if he does not resurrect those demons over this next month, he will win. But my worry is now he's back to the street fighting Sean Strickland. He mentioned for years that he lives in Vegas, but he has nothing to do with the strip, the hotels, the casinos, the nightclubs, the shows, the events in Vegas. He is so far away from the scene in Vegas that he has to be, to keep his mind at peace, because he just can't be around people. He will hurt somebody, he will hurt himself if he's around people. And that's a very, very weird play the UFC, and specifically Dana White, did. Dana White said in his post-fight press conference that he's the asshole that is responsible for signing Sean Strickland there. Yeah, I mean, is there a contract coming up with Sean Strickland, and you're getting inside of his head because you know 1 month from now is a long time for the man to remain focused, and it's well known how much he spars, how much he's in the gym, how good of a shape he's in. This is where Sean Strickland should lean on an Eric Nixick or a Curtis Action Man, Chris Action Man Curtis. And you hope they step in there and they say, fuck all the politics. You got into this martial arts game because it is your drug of choice. You could have drowned in a bottle, or you could have died on a needle, but you are here, you're a championship status. You've earned the title. What he did, guys, at UFC 293, going to the home territory of Israel Adesanya, is insane. And then to put on that performance, no jet lag, no cardio problems, just absolute savage, dialed in that night, and just beautiful boxing, beautiful technique, power when he needed it, dominated the footwork game. Just, it was a masterclass. Is that the peak of Sean Strickland? That's what I mean. Like, that fight was a masterpiece. It was perfection by Sean Strickland. And is something off now? Is something really, really off with Sean Strickland going into the next one? I don't like that he was in that arena. Maybe they paid him $2,500 to make an appearance, $5,000. And he said, yeah, sure, I'm going to watch fights. I live in Vegas. The fights are in Vegas. What could go wrong? And Duplessis was sitting about three or four rows behind him. The UFC camera shows Duplessis flexing, and then they show Strickland flexing. Strickland shoots an imaginary gun with his finger at Duplessis. Duplessis dodges it. Then he does a gun gesture towards Strickland. I don't think Strickland is listening or even present at this point. I think he's already turned red. Yes, he had the presence of mind to ask the Gilbert Burns family to move aside before he tramples the guy he's supposed to fight next month as the headliner, but definitely wasn't worth it. Definitely wasn't worth it. He's going to get a nice payday, $2 to $3 million to be the headliner for the next event. No doubt about it. Alexander Volkanovski, $2 to $3 million to fill in on short notice against Islam Makhachev. Aljamain Sterling, $1 to $2 million to turn around on such short time for being well known for having the biggest balloon ups post fight. The UFC, by sprinkling in these extra dollars, when you have an unlimited amount of funds, that can almost make you control every piece in the puzzle. The factor that is not taken in is the spirituality side of this. Like the Francis Ngannou's, where there's something inside of us that beats blood through our body called heart that cannot be bought or sold. And Francis Ngannou was not going to take $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 extra million dollars to do what they wanted. Francis Ngannou had a bigger heart than all the people I listed, and the confidence and the self-belief, and it's paid off, and it's paying off tenfold. So as time goes on, people will appreciate more what Francis Ngannou had the courage to do. But for now, we're seeing the game where the UFC has to orchestrate things to make the juice worth the squeeze, because there is going to be a time, I believe at the end of next year, where they can start the talks of the future broadcast. They got $2.1 billion for this ESPN deal. Are they going to re-up with ESPN for 10 years? That's what could happen. If they did a seven-year deal already, let's say you get 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23. This is 5 years. Next year with the end of six. Yeah, and you always start negotiations at the beginning of the final year of the contract. Are they going to be re-up with the UFC for 10 years? Or are they going to go on Meta? Are they going to be an exclusive sport on Meta TV or X TV, Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg? Is Spotify going to buy the UFC? Is NBC, CBS, Fox, are they going to want to get in on the pie? Because it's only getting bigger, and it's not just Conor McGregor. Everybody talks about the face of MMA. Was it Chuck Liddell, Royce Gracie? Was it Forrest Griffin, Ronda Rousey, John Jones, Brock Lesnar, Conor McGregor. No, the face of the UFC is Dana White and the UFC itself. I don't see it getting a broadcast deal anything less than 7 years again. They did 7 years with Fox. They're going to complete 7 years with ESPN. It could be as high as 10 years. It could be a 10-year, $5 billion deal. Yeah, that's the trajectory the UFC's on. It's only getting bigger. I truly believe it's going to be the biggest sport in the year, in the world. It's going to surpass football worldwide. And yeah, it's incredible to see. So the UFC micromanaging event to event with sprinkling a little dough here, a million, 2 million, 3 million, a little do-re-mi there, 1 million, 2 million, 5 million if they have to. You're getting these pay-per-view events that are selling themselves. Yeah, it's cool to see as a business class. And I'm happy because the sport continues to grow. Continues to grow and gives jobs and opportunities to people who are absolutely passionate about. So it's only going to get bigger, folks. UFC 296, I talked about the biggest points. Sean Strickland fighting in the stands. Obviously, Colby Covington's antics with Leon Edwards. But the co-main event, Brandon Royval, Factory X's against American Top Team's Alexandro Pantoja. Fun fight. Seems like Royval was just too excited, couldn't get settled in. Pantoja did what he did. I thought he was going to be too big for 125. I thought maybe this is a fight where he would get caught. But no, the man is on another level. He still has not peaked yet. The peak fight is coming for Pantoja. That's what he proved to me. Fun fight. Pretty good. But the division moves on. And like I'm about to move on. Shavkat Rakhmonov, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Shavkat 18 up, 18 down. Whew. The man is the Artur Beterbiev of mixed martial arts. 100% finish rate. Comes from that Stanny background over in those mountain region areas. Just hard nose, very stoic, very soft spoken, and enjoys his job of competing and winning. And what's next for Rakhmonov? In my opinion, needs to be Bilal Muhammad. As I pointed out earlier, Leon Edwards fighting either Islam Makhachev or winner of the UFC 297 main event makes the most sense. It sells the most pay-per-view buys. I love Bilal Muhammad. I think he is extremely intelligent. I think he speaks extremely well on the mic. He's a fighter that has just gone from LFA champion to now UFC number one, number two contender. Like, he's the man, and he's in the driver's seat. And it's great to see how hard work can pay off. And I know the storyline is already written in with him and Leon and the infamous eye poke, but not yet. Joe Rogan, Shavkat, they were mentioning title fight next. Bilal Muhammad is obviously clamoring for a title fight. I love Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. Now, this is how I will know that there is company lines that Joe Rogan has to adhere by. Alex Bejeda does not speak English. Alex Bejeda's only words in English was, come to daddy Adesanya, following his UFC 295 victory over Jiří Procházka at Madison Square Garden. His only words were, come to daddy Adesanya, meaning come up to 205, do the trilogy in the UFC, bing, bang, boom. Joe Rogan, Dana White have just overlooked it. Israel Adesanya pushed it to the side. They don't want to do it. It's just So now with Joe Rogan bringing up title fight with Rachmaninoff, and obviously Bilal Muhammad wants a title fight. You guys have two guys that really want a title fight. You pair them up each other. And if you can, the champion just fought. Rachmaninoff just fought. Bilal Muhammad is ready to fight, but he can't fight Leon Edwards any sooner than he can fight Rachmaninoff. You get Leon Edwards in that super fight against a division champion, whether it's the lightweight champion or the middleweight champion, and that's what you do. Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat is just, that's a great number one contenders fight. Let's see if Shavkat is ready. If he can beat Bilal Muhammad, and not like an Almeida Derek Lewis victory, if he can really put it on Bilal and vice versa, if Bilal isn't just clinching and pushing Shavkat against the fence, if we get two guys who say they want to be champion and we get a fight that expresses that, that's the perfect fight to make. That's the perfect fight to make. What else? I don't have the fights in front of me. Paddy Pimblett, Tony Ferguson. Paddy Pimblett, he is a freaking gorilla for lightweight. He is big. There was some point where he's posturing up in Tony Ferguson's guard, and you can't see Tony Ferguson. Like, he disappears. I know he's skinny and slender and kind of looks like a bag of bones, but Paddy Pimblett just blanketed him. Amazing how Tony survived that early onslaught and made it to the end of the fight. But Paddy Pimblett is a big boy. He could easily go up to 170. I mean, right now he's probably the size walking around of a welterweight walking around. He's probably 190, 195 right now. My goodness. I would like to see him at 170. Maybe next year. He just does a one-off fight. And can we just get him with no gas tank blips? Maybe his power just grows. He's got to get his chin down. He was blaming it on his hair in the past, that he was constantly keeping his chin up because he's flicking his hair back and it's in his eyeballs. He gets the corn rolls like Matt Steamroller Favola. Maybe there's some impersonation going on there, or flattery. And Paddy Pimblett gets the win. Tony Ferguson doesn't die. Still lost 7 straight, but Paddy Pimblett now can shut the haters up for the time being. He's a good dude. Congrats to him and his partner. Twin babies on the way. That will be very exciting. I expect a big fight for him in July, maybe. Maybe he takes another year just to develop. His brand is so big that he should only pick and choose. I know he said that if it's a name the UFC sends, he just signs the dotted line. Come on, man. It ain't easy being a dad, a young dad, and keeping the cool at home while chasing the dream at work. So he should pick and choose his next opponent. Be smart about it. Nothing crazy. Just keep the gravy train moving. That's it. Tony Ferguson, I see that Jim Miller is booked in January. I see that Michael Johnson is booked for February. But if either of those fighters get a victory, I would love to see Tony Ferguson fight them at UFC 300 in a retirement fight, a double retirement fight. Can we double retire Jim Miller and Tony Ferguson, or double retire Michael Johnson and Tony Ferguson as one of the prelim fights on ESPN? I think that'd be a beautiful send-off on a gigantic event. Speaking of UFC 300, I just got some word that Dana White is going to make some announcements very soon. So I wonder what it could be. He said it's not going to be the whole card, but some fights. I don't know what fights are left to match make and book. There's the Conor McGregor and Chandler. I think that will just make everybody lose their mind. Can we get If I want Brock, DC, Rhonda Tate, Connor Chandler, can you give us one of those three? And say, guys, folks, there's a lot more to be announced. I think that would be awesome. So, what do we have next? There's what other fight? Am I missing one fight? I feel like when I talked about the Pimlet. Let me see. Oh my gosh, who kicked off the pay-per-view? Who kicked off the pay-per-view? Let's see. Josh Emmett, Bryce Mitchell. Oh my goodness. That was crazy. A lot of people are on Josh Emmett for how he acted. He screamed at Bryce Mitchell and then he was apologetic in his body language. But unless you've been in there, nobody can actually pretend like they know what it feels like to be on the first card on a UFC pay-per-view and you knock out somebody with one clean punch. And I don't think he saw the seizure that was happening. So I think he just reacted as if everything was going to be okay with Bryce Mitchell. But Bryce Mitchell took a really serious shot to the face and the nose. And he was convulsing and he was wobbly legged even minutes after the fight. Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier were very adamant that he needed to be escorted out of there safely. But very, very, very scary to see that. And great win for Emmett. Back into the win column after losing to Yair Rodriguez earlier this year. For Bryce Mitchell, took the fight on short notice. I'm sure he got paid to show up, but it's still, he's fought some big boys at that featherweight weight class, so either he needs to bulk up and let's see, he's fought Epson Barbosa, Ilya Topuria, Josh Emmett. Big boy, big boy, big boy. I don't know. Because everybody is a fan of Bryce Mitchell. I believe John Anik believes that he's the best jiu-jitsu practitioner in the UFC. Big statement. But I would argue that guys that are probably better than Bryce Mitchell in jiu-jitsu, Damian Maya, Charles Oliveira, those guys have either won a UFC title or have fought for it multiple times. And it's hard to imagine Bryce Mitchell getting a title fight anytime soon. He really needs to take a lot of time off and he really needs to think about strategy because everybody knows he wants to drag the fight to the floor. Everybody knows that he presents a high-level jiu-jitsu game. So how can he get the fight to the floor? Maybe he just does wrestling practice for the next 6 to 8 months. Maybe he puts on weight so that way if he goes for a traditional jiu-jitsu takedown or judo takedown, head-arm takedown, inside trip takedown, then he will have a little more force behind it. But for him to think that he's going to hang on the feet with the featherweight elites like Volkanovski, Ilya Topuria, Josh Emmett, Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar, he's delusional to think that. So I pray for Bryce. Obviously want him to have a speedy recovery. Obviously know that he's super cool with the New York guys, Aljamain Sterling, Ally Quinta, Pumi Nkuta. Shout-outs to Pumi for coming back and a win. Never doubted you, kid. But Bryce Mitchell, something needs to happen. Because that was tough. That was tough to watch. And I know it sounds like I'm being harsh, but it's like you don't want to see that happen to him again. You don't want to see that, especially if you care for him. I'm sure he's hearing that from family members like, dude, what are we doing? Are you going to retire? And I hope he takes that energy and the time to think and realize that a change has to be made. Yeah, taking a fight on a short notice isn't great, but that had nothing to do with technique. He was a sitting duck there. Josh Emmett kind of crow hopped, shuffled forward, found his balance, and just unleashed a throw from the right field wall to third base on Bryce Mitchell's jaw. Tough. Tough. Earlier fights, Alonzo Meadowfield looked fucking dangerous against Dustin Jacoby, Irene Aldana against Carol Rosa. One of the craziest fights you'll see this year. Cody Garbrandt returns to his winning form against Suffolk County's own, Long Island's own, Brian Kelleher. Cody Garbrandt looks sharp. Joe Rogan pointed out, it doesn't look like his skills have diminished. You just hope that jaw can replenish. As he has the tools, he's still fast, he's still powerful, but does he have any sort of defense now that he's getting older and he's maturing? We'll see. Irania Lipsky against Casey O'Neill. Fantastic brutalizing from the Queen of Violence, Lipsky. Beautiful handiwork on the feet to knock down Casey O'Neill. That then led to the submission. Looked like she was about to break O'Neill's arm. Beautiful submission. Beautiful win. Yeah. It was a great event. I hope you guys get to check out some of the work I've done on GiveMeSport.com. I'm pumping out content for them every day, every night. Hope you guys are enjoying it. The clips with the Patty Pimlet interview and Leon Edwards interview. It was a great job by the video editing team over at GiveMeSport. Having a lot of fun doing what I love. I hope you guys are enjoying this content. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. Your boy, Isaac Ike Feldman, will check in with you next week. We're going to do some MMA 2023 awards and 2024 look forward. It'll be fun. Until then, I'm out. Peace.